So, thanks a lot for inviting me to talk about the Southern Ocean. So it's a slightly different settings. So one of the most intriguing feature in the climate system is probably the increase in sea ice extent over the last 30 years. The increase is not just an homogeneous increase, but you have a complex special pattern with a decrease close to the peninsula in the ice concentration and an increase nearly everywhere else with a maximum in the Ross Sea and in the Weddell Sea. So one of the key questions is to look at the origin of this trend and are we able to reproduce or to predict it. If you look at the CMIP5 ensemble of our models that are not initialized, so the classical simulations, you see that if you take all the models which have an ensemble, there is a wide range in all those ensembles. On average, all the models, or nearly all of them, has a negative trend. But if you look at the range, you can find a few, and one particular model which has a very large trend, at least a few that have one member of the ensemble that is compatible with the observation. So one hypothesis is to say, yes, the response to the forcing is a decrease, but the internal variability is very large in the Southern Ocean, at least if you trust those models, and so it can compensate for the force trend. So the simulated trends are more or less compatible with the models if you take into account its strong internal variability. But we must be careful because the models have quite strong biases in the Southern Ocean. So we should not rely too much on those conclusions, but at least you have some compatibility on that. What are the mechanisms responsible for those trends? So if you look at observation now, you see that there is a clear link between the changes in ice motion and the changes in concentration. So if you look, for instance, in those areas where you have a large increase in ice concentration over the period 1992-2010 now, you have also strong winds. So winds are playing a role in the changes, but are they the cause of the changes are only of the spatial distribution of the change? That's still an open question. Maybe the models are also missing one of the forcing. So they are not able, in the majority of the cases, to reproduce the trend because they miss the impact of the meltwater input from the Southern Ocean. In this experiment made with ECRs, you have heard about this model in Richard's talk, they have increased the meltwater, or they have had some meltwater in the Southern Ocean coming from Antarctica, and they have seen quite a large impact on the Southern Ocean, with a large increase of the sea ice extent close to the peninsula in their case, and also in the majority sector of the Southern Ocean. So one hypothesis is to say, yes, the models may miss one forcing. And all those mechanisms, in a way, put forward the key role of ice-ocean interactions. Why? Because you may know that the Southern Ocean is weakly stratified, so there is strong vertical heat flux because the ocean at depths is warmer than at surface. So if you have a weakly stratified ocean, you have a large heat flux, and this could, for instance, forbid sea ice to form. If you are able to get an ocean which is much more stratified, you have less input, and then you have a larger increase. There are several mechanisms that could explain this shift from a weakly stratified to a slightly more stratified ocean. One of the examples is to add fresh water at the surface. That was the example where you can add some meltwater from Greenland. But there are also some internal mechanisms that redistribute salt between the different layers in the Southern Ocean. So there are plenty of potential processes that can be responsible for that. If now, as you have ideas about the mechanism, at least the role of the wind, the role of the ice-ocean interaction, the role of freshwater input, you can say, yes, I've got some idea. Can I predict the evolution of sea ice in the Southern Ocean? First, you can look at the interannual variation. That's experiment made with CCM 3 or 4, I don't remember. 3, so that's right. So experiment with CCM 3, but the date is wrong. Sorry. So it's experiment into the paper is 2013. So if you look at the potential predictability, so if you have one, a value of one, it means that you have a good chance to have to make good prediction if you have nice initial condition and a good models that experiment made in ideal condition. You see that you have a very high predictability of the ice edge only of a few months. So here that's the Southern Ocean, in the different sectors, the months. You see that you have very high predictability during a few months, and then you have some predictability still based on the propagation of some anomalies and the heat content in the Southern Ocean. But that's the only for, as you see here, really when you look at the ice edge, that's only 1 or 2 years ahead. But we would like to go forward and see, do you get some predictability for the next 30 years? And again, that's an idealized experiment. It's a slightly simpler model that allows to make a lot of long simulation. If you look at the correlation of the sea ice extent trend, it's not the predictability of the ice edge itself, but that's the predictability of the trend. You see that if you look at the trend on different periods, you have no predictability, more or less. That's the limit where you have a significant predictability. You have no predictability on time scale of 5 to 10 years, but predictability rise again, and you have some predictability from the 10 to 30 years in those idealized experiments. That's probably something that you have in mind when you look at the Northern Hemisphere. You say, okay, at the beginning you have some predictability because of initial condition, you lose predictability, and you get back the predictability because of the forcing. There are forcing in those experiments. But that's not the case. If you do not initialize the ocean, you do not have predictability. So even in this, even if you do not have the 4R, that initial condition, sorry, in the ocean, that really brings you the predictability, not the forcing. So it's a bit different compared to the Northern Hemisphere. So the next step after the initial experiment to say yes, if you know the ocean more or less, you can get some prediction of the sea ice trend. So look at the last 30 years. Is it possible to have prediction for the last 30 years if you use such kind of models? So it's the model here is used with a particle filter in the ocean. I have no time to go into detail. But if you look at this, the non-initial Einkast with this model, you have 96 experiments here. That's the histogram of the trend. So you see, you have the observation. If you look at the histogram of the trend with 96 members, you do not have one single member that is close to observation or that is above the observation. A few of them are positive, very few, but none of them is really larger than the observation. Of course, there are bits of uncertainty in the observation, so you can say that it's again marginally compatible. If you initialize the Einkast, then you have a clear shift in the distribution. The mean value is very close to zero, slightly positive, but if you look at the full ensemble, now the observations are clearly in the range. So initializing the Einkast have a clear impact on the trend on the 30-year value. So that's a standard experiment. You would maybe ask, how can we get this good value? Because what is interesting is that if you look at the observation, the non-initial Einkast have a decrease in sea ice extent nearly everywhere. But if you look at the initial Einkast, in addition to the trend, you are able to get more or less a spatial distribution with a large decrease in the area of the peninsula and the Bellingshausen Sea, and then decrease here and an increase in the ice extent in the other sector. Or you do not have the details, but at least you have the large scale pattern. So in those simulation, I said we use a particle filter, but this model is initialized in the 19th century. So we use the few observations over the whole 20th century to initialize the model, and we diagnose the freshwater input to get the right initial state. And this freshwater input is essential to get the adequate initial condition in the ocean, but it's not required during the Einkast. So you need the freshwater perturbation probably to have an efficient particle filter, because if you have a diagnosed freshwater, it means that we select the freshwater forcing that gives you the best agreement with the observation, then you are able to follow much closer the observation. So if you do not put a perturbation before the 80s, your initial state is not good enough to give you a clear shift in the distribution. So The initialization is not helpful. Again, that was the standard experiment that you have seen. If now you use an additional fresh water during the Einkast, now you have a very good agreement. So again, that's the fresh water that you could diagnose before. But in a normal situation for you should not know the prediction, so it's a bit an artificial test. But in that case, we have a very good agreement. So it was not bad here, but it's slightly improved in the case where you have a diagnosed fresh water. So if you look at the answer to the question that were asked, so how can we improve the prediction of decadal trend in the Arctic sea ice extent? So a first way would be to predict the meltwater input, but it's probably shifting the problem. How can we predict the meltwater input? But it seems that an adequate initialization of the Southern Ocean would be a good way to improve the trend even on decadal and multi-decadal timescale. But to have an adequate initialization of the Southern Ocean, you probably have to start your system very early and at least decades before you start your prediction to be sure that both the surface and the intermediate layer are correctly initialized. Thank you very much.